go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster in the driver's seat. And on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Tom,
could I be in the passenger seat?
The saga with our encounter with a pretty big-sized bee, a hive of bees, is now over at our home, thanks to Monica King and her team, who humanely took the bees away. And then they take them back to whatever, to their beekeepers. So no bees, I believe, lost their lives in this encounter.
Well, that's interesting. I'm trying to get a picture of how in the world they were able to manage to get these bees to go with them.
It was very interesting to watch the gentleman go up on the ladder, spray with a little can of, glass cleaner or something that it's not going to kill the bees, but temporarily paralyzes them. He takes a vacuum cleaner and scoops them all up. and I'm told they got the queen, that's the big deal. They got the queen.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah. So that was our excitement for the morning at the Buckmaster home. It is Buckmaster here on the radio, our 13th year, midweek edition, Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. The Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the Live Line. Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Steve Kasachek. Steve, did you have as an exciting morning as we had at our home?
I don't think so, and I understand bees are pollinators and all that good stuff, but I don't like them around, and they can go find a flower in someone else's yard as far as I'm concerned, so good for you for offloading them in a humane way.
Yeah, it was nice to see how the whole procedure works. I had no idea that they could do that, scoop them up in a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, were you on the other side of the glass watching?
Oh, that is a given.
Not holding the ladder?
No, Ann and I were on the other side of the glass watching this drama unfold. Speaking of a drama unfolding, 10 days ago, you were with us, about 10 days ago, 2 weeks this upcoming Friday. You were our Friday Focus interview guest, and you had some doubts about Proposition 412, which Tucson voters are preparing to vote by mail on this May 16th initiative, which would extend for 25 years TEP's franchise with Tucson to operate infrastructure within the city after the current franchise expires in 2026. Give us an update. Where are you right now on this deal?
Well, I'm not supporting it. Here's the reality. This thing is locking us in for a quarter of a century, which is about twice the amount of time you've been on the air.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a hard, interesting way to frame it. I mean, anybody right now who is the major voting demographic, the people who vote the most are 50 and above. Every one of those people are going to be 75, 85, 90 years old when this thing expires. I mean, we are essentially giving TEP the reins to address climate issues for the next quarter of a century if this thing passes. Now, this is not to demonize TEP. You know, they're our utility company. They're not a monopoly, but it would be very, very difficult for anybody to enter the market because of the significant infrastructure investment they'd have to make. So this is TEP. This is the horse we're riding for the next quarter century. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Steve, but on top of this, I see that the city is now thinking about creating our own city-run electric utility.
Well, I saw the headline, too, and the first thing I thought of is, where'd that come from? we would have to effectively put a value on all of the infrastructure TEP has already invested in if we're going to buy them out, and then buy them out. And we don't have the bonding capacity for that. So we simply don't have that ability. Now, what we could do is is set up a micro grid of solar panels and run power to businesses and things. And there's nothing that would prevent us from doing that. But I don't see any way that the city of Tucson has got the financial ability, much less the technical capability, to do what TEP is doing. They've got decades of investment, and the logistics of it strike me as being untenable. But maybe something on a very small scale. That's not what that article seemed to be suggesting. So we will have study session next week, and the topic might come up, and there'll be some significant conversations going on. But about whether or not we could even have the capability. Circling back to TEP, though, and the franchise agreement, what it effectively does is it sets a fee called a resiliency fee that would generate about $4 or $5 million a year. And for the first 10 years, 90% of that fee will go to undergrounding some utility lines along our Gateway Corridor, which is essentially next to the university, next to Banner Hospital. 10% of it would go to climate issues. What I did when I saw it, first of all, I voted to put it on the ballot. And the reason for that is the TEP was in a hurry to get it to the ballot. That's fine. They're paying for the entire election. So I figured, okay, as long as you're paying for it and you're in a hurry, go ahead and put it on the ballot. That does not mean I support the content of what's in the franchise agreement. My concern with it, and I have shared this with TEP, is that it provides far too little in terms of climate resiliency, rooftop solar decarbonization, and all the kinds of things that we want to see them doing, and that they say that they're committed to doing, talk is cheap. And so what I did after the vote was announced is I got in touch with my contact at TEP, and I said, look, if you guys will set up a memorandum of understanding separate from the franchise agreement, an MOU with the city, and commit to even half of what you're asking of your ratepayers, even half of that $4 or $5 million a year, and dedicate it to the city's climate plan for the first 10 years. That would be $20-30 million for 10 years. I was told by the TEP folks that they had already sent a draft MOU over to the city manager's office that committed them to what they were prepared to do outside the franchise agreement. So I reached out to the city manager and I said, I understand you've got a draft MOU from TEP. And he says, no, we don't have a draft MOU. I have a letter from them saying some kinds of general things that they might be willing, that they're willing to do, but we don't have an MOU with them. So not only do I have questions about, I'm not supportive of what's in the franchise agreement, the way it's going to the voters. But now I have a question about the whole issue of transparency and what's going on in terms of actual commitments. I would like to see TEP, and they will tell you that, you know, we can't do the kinds of things that I'm asking them to do in the text of a franchise agreement. But what they certainly can do is set up an MOU with the city outside that franchise agreement and say, we will commit, say, $3 million a year for the next 10 years, which is half of what we're asking for our ratepayers, and we'll dedicate it to the city's climate work. If they're not willing to do that, then I guess I have to question how serious they really are in terms of acting in the climate realm and decarbonization. This is a quarter century. This is our one chance for the next 25 years to get a solid commitment of what we can expect from TEP. And, unless and until we see that, I'm not prepared to support it. Now, you said in your intro that this would lock them in for 25 years once this expires in 2026. Actually, what would happen is it would start the meter freshly for 25 years. If this fails on May 16th, they still have until 2026 to sit down at the table and hammer out what I would consider to be an acceptable agreement. And so your lights are not going to go dark on May 17th if this thing fails. TEP will simply go back to the bargaining table with us and with the ratepayers and with the residents of the city of Tucson, who they are asking to support this and come up with a more solid commitment in terms of what they're willing to do for climate plans, the climate commitment. That's where I am on this, and I read Nikki Lee's thing in the Star a couple of days ago, and my question coming away from it was, where's the beef? I mean, it's as there was really no meat in what you put on. It's just that we want a utility company that's well grounded, and I agree with that. But this franchise agreement, A, doesn't need to be voted on right now, and B, doesn't contain the kinds of commitments to climate change investments that I want to see.
All right. Before we move on to another topic after the break, rather than keep Matt on the line through the break, we'll go to Matt in our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Matt. You're with Steve Kasachek.
Yeah. Hey, Steve. My question is, Did the council have to refer this for a vote? Because I just believe that by doing this vote, even you have potentially put the entire city in jeopardy with this very convoluted thing. And it may not be that you had a choice because TEP had the right to pay for it. But if you had any control over this, I think the city made a terrible mistake by putting this out to the public this way, because people are voting on it and they have really no idea what they're voting on.
Okay, so there are a few things packed into that, and Bill, cut me off if we need to go to the break, because
we really do.
Right,
do you want
to? Yeah, I'll write down some notes and
Why don't we take the break right now, because Steve and the team up at Mona's are waiting to hear this, and I'm glad to deliver the good news about Mona's Danish Bakery. Home of the Danish Kringle, open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast. That's kind of their signature thing, of course, breakfast. They do a great lunch as well, but everybody loves the bakery case. I'm right now thinking about, man, I'd really like a piece of that carrot cake up there. I go through these things where, oh, man, start thinking about carrot cake. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. They're located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We'll be back with Steve Kasachek right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust green things. A family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. The first week of the, I hope it will be, the merry month of May. Let's go now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management back to our interview with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek, Democrat representing the 6th Ward in the city. All right. Caller Matt says the city actually has made a grave mistake by even offering this up at this point to the voters, Steve Kasachek.
Okay, let me unpack a little bit of what Matt said. His question was, did we have to take it to the vote? Ultimately, the city has to call the election. TEP can't unilaterally do that. And so, yes, it is up to the city to call an election. Did we have to do it for May 16th? The answer to that is no. There are four times by state statute that we have that we can call an election, a special election. One is in March, one is in May, then in August, and then in November. We could have said, no, we're not ready for this. We should push this off to August or November or even next year or even the year after when we have a more solid and palatable agreement. What happened was that, and by the way, I know at least two other people on the council had felt that this was rushed prior to the vote. What happened was on the day of the vote, we were handed a letter that was written by the CEO of TEP, and she wrote that TEP was committing to take city buildings to 100% renewables by 2030, quote, or as soon as possible. Well, or as soon as possible is an off-ramp. It's an escape clause. But when we were handed that letter, and actually KOLD ran a spot on this, and Bud Foster covered this about a week ago, and you'll see while the mayor is speaking about the vote, I'm looking down, and what I'm literally doing is reading the letter that was handed to me immediately prior to the vote, saying this, TEP is committing to 100% renewables by 2030 or as soon as possible. And all right, so this is a done deal. And says, all right, you guys are in such a hurry, put it on the ballot. I've been criticized by a couple of the people on the council since then for saying, well, by putting it on the ballot, you essentially sent the message that you agree with that. And I take strong exception to that. TEP's paying for it. It's their thing. They were in a hurry, and they gave us this letter, which basically doesn't mean anything. And because when you put in the letter that, or as soon as possible, like I say, it's their off-ramp. It's their escape clause. The voters, Matt also said that the voters are voting on something that's, his word, convoluted, and that they don't understand. If they don't understand it, then they should vote no. If they feel that this is not straightforward, and by the way, that pamphlet, I have never seen a voter guide that comes out which is simply the verbiage of a contract, you know, all the whereases and definitions and all that, and it's 18 or 20 pages of something that really is legalese. More typically, you have a paragraph saying, here's what you're voting on if you say yes, here's what you're voting on if you say no, here are some comments in favor, here are some comments against. So I agree with Matt in terms of the tenor of his call, and that is if voters don't understand this, then the correct answer is no. Send it back to the drawing board, send it back to the negotiating table, and come up with something that makes sense for the next quarter of a century in this community. Because a quarter century from now, we're going to be facing an entirely different climate conversation than we are now. And this is the time to get it right, because it locks us in with TEP for the next 25 years.
All right, I want to move on to another story. This first was reported in Air and Space Forces magazine April 25th. Picked up today, the Wall Street Journal has a piece about it. A new power, put this in quote, power projection wing will replace the A-10s at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Any comment on that, Steve Kasachek?
Well, what I know about it is that the DOD are committed to phasing out over some period of time, and I don't believe it was exactly specified, phasing out the A-10s. It's been quite controversial for the last decade since the conversation started, because there was a concern about losing DM as a as an entity in Tucson if the A-10 wasn't there. It sounds as though they have come up with a solution to keep DM, phase out the A-10, but to replace the A-10 with something other than the F-35, which is also quite controversial. And it was so controversial that the DOD even said Tucson was not a good fit based on the location of the base. And so I know that we have made, and the federal government has made millions of dollars worth of investment into it's essentially their high-tech version of our 911 center, so that they can do emergency surveillance through the Pacific region. We're splitting that with Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida for a while. Now I guess we're gonna ramp up our piece of that, and they're gonna have some other fixed wing commitments to the base, which will effectively keep the base solvent and whole and in Tucson. But doing that short of adding an F-35, which, as I say, the DOD said was not a good fit for Tucson. So it sounds like it's a good solution. I know people like Mark Kelly, who know more about the A-10 and their value, are supportive of this, and so I'll defer to his expertise in that. I know as a fixed-wing aircraft that provides low air support, it has been immensely valuable in operations such as in Afghanistan and some of the Middle Eastern countries. So as long as the experts in the field are convinced that our men and women in uniform in some of these operations are still going to have low air support, I'll defer to them and support the move.
And apparently the Air Force is expecting that the base population will return to roughly 9,600 personnel once the new wing is in place. So it sounds like this is a pretty good deal as far as keeping a very robust Air Force presence in Tucson.
Right. Not only in terms of the personnel there, but again, a lot of construction activity between now and then, which is going to be good for the local economy and our local general contractors and subcontractors. So there's a lot of positive to this. When I first started reading the various articles about it, I was trying to read between the lines, saying, are they going to plant the F-35 here? And in fact, they evidently are not going to. So I think they found a sweet spot in terms of an appropriate mission for Davis-Monthan, ramping up the personnel and keeping them here for the long haul, which I think is a good thing.
All right, we've got about 3 minutes left, a little bit less than that. How about the money picture, the budget picture, Jen? Let's see, July 1, we'll have a new 12-month budget for the city of Tucson. What will it mean for this city?
We are doing, we being the ward office, are doing a survey right now of all of our constituents, and I sent out a postcard, and I had a link in my newsletter for the last few weeks asking people what their priorities are. I'm going to roll that into our conversation as we come to the final vote on this. And the priorities that I'm hearing are, number one, public safety. That's police, fire, and 911. And that evidently, and I haven't seen the final results, but we'll have them tomorrow or the next day. That's the number one concern of people. Number two is roads, and I think that that we've made a significant investment in that already through Prop 411. The third one is climate, and that's the conversation we just had about TEP. So we are in a good position from a financial standpoint right now. We do have some concerns about changes in the state income tax law. The flat tax that has been implemented could have a $25 million impact on our general fund going forward. So we'll have to balance that in the years ahead. The state has offered up, I said that wrong, I think it's going to be a $27 million impact, and the state has offered up $25 million for year one to keep us whole and to help us sort of ease into this deficit. So with all that said, we're in a good situation right now. We have to keep our eye on the fact that for the last 2-3 years, we've been relying a lot on federal dollars, you know, the ARPA dollars and the CARES dollars that we got from the federal government through COVID. That's going away. And so it's kind of back to square one. It's back to we have to be fiscally solvent and responsible. And I think that with an eye on what the community really values our investments in, and as I just said, that is public safety, it's in climate, and it's in the roads. And so we'll keep that in front of us going forward.
Okay, Steve Kasacek, nice catching up with you again. And hope you have a great day.
You too. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right, Steve Kasacek, who represents Ward 6 in the city of Tucson. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show, Comet Discoverer, former Parade Magazine science editor. His monthly visit, Dr. David Levy, coming up right after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by our friends at Green Things. Green Things located, they're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo and all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. The website is greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. As we're waiting to try to get Dr. David Levy on the line, hopefully we'll have Dr. Levy here in a moment. But I'm going to tell you about a little bit more about Green Things. We love Green Things. Perfect time of year for Green Things to do all your spring gardening. They've got everything you need for the garden at Green Things. And they are open daily. And in their 51st year of business. So let's do this, Tom, while I get, maybe we'll go to our segment four interview with Mitch Tobin. So let's take the break early. That way we'll have nonstop content. Well, are you telling me to hold on? Would we have? Oh, you're telling me that we do have Dr. Levy, hopefully with us on the live line. We do have Dr. David Levy. David, almost thought we were going to lose you there. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm all right. I was a little bit ill for a couple of days, but I'm doing much, much better now.
Well, we're very glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad we were able to hook up with you there. David Levy, former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Education organization. Dr. Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9. That was the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosion ever witnessed in the solar system. David, let's begin with asteroids. People are often saying, gee, that asteroid sure looked like it had a big tail. Do asteroids have tails?
Comets have tails.
Okay.
And they found a few asteroids that they describe as asteroids with tail bills, but they don't. Those are asteroids. Unless they have a tail, in which case they're comets. I think it's as simple as that. I wonder why people are trying to make astronomy so much more complicated than it needs to be, you know?
Well, speaking of comets, which is something that you have been, a pursuit that you have been really engaged in since, December maybe of 1965. Any plans to give it up?
Well, I'm always kind of thinking about it. I don't think I'm going to find any more comets, Bill, because it's been a very long time that I've been searching my entire life. I've decided to donate the main telescope that I've been using for comet hunting to the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. And I actually brought it over to Star Arizona just yesterday. And they are going to ship it to the to Toronto, where it will become the there will become, I think, their main exhibit in their new telescope museum. But I have other telescopes here. It's not the only one I've got. And I'm looking forward to, continuing my search for comets with other telescopes that I have here. But the thing is about searching for comets is that I don't do it just to find the comet, because if I had done it for that reason, I would have given up decades ago. I do it because I love the search. It's the search that is so important.
So it's like that's the excitement for you, is the search, not necessarily actually even finding a comet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually, the finding the comet is secondary. I enjoy it. I love it. It's one of the most thrilling things that has happened in my life, but it is the search that I really do enjoy.
David, are you getting excited about this moon mission? Men and women women for the first time
going
to the
it.
Moon. Yeah.
Excited about it, but there was something about what happened in 1969. I was working at a summer camp, and we all went up to the auditorium to watch the landing of Apollo 11. We all went up to the auditorium to watch the launching a few days before that. And then at dinner on the 20th of July, the head counselor said that they would be doing some observing, that they were doing some free play that night. And I walked up to the head counselor and I said, "Don't you think we really should be in the auditorium watching the moonwalk?" And he barked at me and he said, "Go back and do your job," which is what I did. But I believe the head counselor overheard our conversation because immediately he stood up, called for everyone's attention, and he said, "Evening program canceled. Tonight after dinner, we are all going to head to the auditorium and we are going to watch the moonwalk, everybody. History will be made. The earth will be a different place after tonight, and we need to be a part of it." And we were up there for maybe 3-4 hours, and you could tell there were some lighter moments and heavier moments. But when they showed the picture of Neil Armstrong on the porch of the lunar module about to climb down, the auditorium was silent, even the six-year-olds. That was something that nobody wanted to miss. And I'll never, ever forget that.
All right, David, what about the David Levy quote of the month, please?
Okay, this one's in two parts. Here it goes, and I'm going to ask a question after the first half. Mi staris kaj kapis, la cielo estis limigata, la cielo estis stiloj se angi. Mi staris mine sias kial, san de zero, san volo, mi staris satu silentia monteto, kaj regardis on le cielo gis. Miage oculoge estis blindage. Pro stelos cas stenova. Mi regardis on la cielon.
Excuse me?
Do you want to give an idea as to what language that is?
What language is that? No, I have no idea.
The language is Esperanto. And it's a constructed language by a Dr. Zamenhof from Poland, who believed that if the world had a single language, the chances for world peace would be a lot higher. The people who speak Esperanto, and I'm not one of them, still believe that. But in English, those words mean the following. I stood and stared. The sky was lit. The sky was stars all over it. I stood. I knew not why. Without a wish, without a will, I stood upon that silent hill and stared into the sky until my eyes were blind with stars. And still I stared into the sky. It was Wendy's favorite poem.
Well, we miss Wendy for sure. David, thanks for being with us. I know you're not feeling well today. I do appreciate you just rallying to give us a few minutes. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks a million, Bill, and thanks for, I'm glad we're able to do this.
We'll talk to you in June. Thanks, David.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye. All right, we're going to take a break right here. Environmental reporter Mitch Tobin, get an update on how's that melt coming in the Rocky Mountains, the all-important melt. Get that Colorado River water. Maybe we can get a few more inches out of it. Let's talk to Mitch after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax
The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, live in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line, we do our telephone interviews, of which we are doing today pretty much a telephonic show presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Before we move on to our next segment, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, I've got their weather at midday, 71. Hey, that's nice. Great day to get out and do some hiking. In the Gila National Wilderness, it's a beautiful area, beautiful part of the Land of Enchantment. And what makes it so enchanting, especially this time of year, when it's say 100 here in Tucson, it's at least 10 degrees cooler in Silver City because of the elevation, which is pretty much the same as Denver, 5,400 feet above sea level. So start thinking about a road trip, about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Head east, take a left at Lordsburg, and head up to Silver City. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of tempting ideas about recreation, some great places to stay, and to dine as well. The Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment is Mitch Tobin. Mitch is director of the Water Desk Journalism Initiative at UC Boulder, University of Colorado, that focuses on Western water issues and the Colorado River Basin in particular. The award-winning journalist Mitch, former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register, Tucson Citizen, and Arizona Daily Star, is the author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. That book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publisher Awards category. Mitch joins us from his home base in Southern California. Hey, Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
So how are things going with the snow melt? What's your weather been like up in the Rockies?
Well, the snow is definitely starting to melt. We've had a really pretty incredible year, especially in California and the Sierra Nevada, but also in Utah and Colorado. And so in a lot of places, there's been record snowpack. And now that the temperatures are warming up, that snow is starting to melt, but there's still quite a lot of snow up in the high country. And, you know, we're really beginning to see the snow melt that will continue to happen over the coming weeks and months. And so that is, in fact, causing some issues with flooding in various places. But it's generally good news in terms of restoring water levels in reservoirs and bringing up the levels in rivers and streams.
Is this one of the best years in recent memory for snowfall in Colorado?
It is. It's definitely been one of the best years. And it's not only in Colorado, it's really a large portion of the West. And so that's been good because a lot of these places have been in drought. Now, I should stress that although this has really been a banner year and it helps, it's not enough to counteract what has been more than 20 years of dry conditions in the Colorado River Basin. And so, you know, were we to get four or five more years like this back to back, then, the reservoirs would all recover and we'd be in great position. But that is very unlikely to happen. And so although this is, you know, good news that we've had a very strong year for the snowpack, you have to look at it in the longer term context of decades of dry weather.
Well, it's not, as you pointed out, it's not just Colorado. California's had a near record, in some areas, record snow levels. Utah has had record snow levels. Northern Arizona, I think this is the best snow year in about 10 to 15 years. We had a listener who was wondering about the Great Salt Lake. There have been a lot of stories about it's been drying up, and I'm wondering if that this snow melt up in Utah will help restore some of that water to the Great Salt Lake.
Yes, I think it will help, but as is the case with the Colorado River Basin, just 1 year is not enough. And so it's good news, without a doubt, that there is more water in the system for the Great Salt Lake, for the Colorado River, for the Rio Grande, for all sorts of rivers and reservoirs and water supplies. But again, it's important to look at the long-term context of the aridification of this region, you know, due to climate change and rising temperatures, and have to take it with a grain of salt.
Had another listener, Mitch, who wondered, because of your expertise with the book about endangered species, if you could discuss the Endangered Species Act, funding for wildlife preservation on private and public land, and future current status of new legislation expected to fund the conservation or restoration of wildlife and plant species in danger of extinction. That's a lot. That sounds like a three-part question, but generally, do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, it sounds like it's enough for a book.
Yeah.
A lot of material in there. Yeah. Well, the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973. My book focuses on its application in the Southwest. And, you know, it's undoubtable that the Endangered Species Act has really saved a number of species from extinction. So that is definitely in its favor. On the other hand, there are very few comparatively species that have been listed as endangered that have recovered sufficiently so that they no longer warrant federal protection. But there certainly have been cases where that is true. And so funding is definitely one part of it. That was certainly one of the conclusions of my book, is that we devote relatively little money to conserving and protecting endangered species, and certainly that could help in a lot of ways. In some cases, we don't even know how many species are out there, how many individual animals, because there's not money to do the surveys and to do the science. And so that has been a chronic problem with the application of the Endangered Species Act, is that it needs to be backed up with some money.
I want to circle back to the Colorado River. What's your thinking, and what are you thinking about the federal government and the proposal that they have put on the table right now, Mitch Tobin?
Well, the wet weather that we've had over the winter has taken some pressure off the system, but still there is this sort of looming problem that the federal government has said that if the states do not agree on cutbacks to their use of the Colorado River, they are going to come in and impose cuts. And so we're really still waiting to see where that all lands. And right now, kind of the crux of the conflict is how much sacrifice California will make versus how much sacrifice Arizona will make. And so, you know, I think that this has really been an ongoing issue for years now. And although this, you know, winter with a lot of snowpack helps the reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell are going to be coming up because of this wet weather, it still does not solve this fundamental longstanding problem of people using more Colorado River than there is water in the system. And so we're still waiting to see how that's going to resolve in terms of where the cutbacks will take place. And, you know, everybody is sort of waiting to see what will happen with that.
Tell us a little bit about where you are with this journalism initiative at the University of Colorado. How is that going?
It's going great. So we're based at the University of Colorado, and one of the primary things that we do is fund journalists and media outlets to support their coverage of water issues. We started out focused on the Colorado River Basin, but since starting about 4 years ago, we have also expanded to include the Rio Grande Basin, which is, you know, adjoining the Colorado River Basin in its upper reaches, and in some ways is similar, facing threats related to climate change and growth and invasive species, but certainly has its own unique characteristics. And so, you know, we think that there is a need for more and better water journalism because these issues are so important and growing more important by the day. And so it's really been an honor and a privilege to be able to support journalists in the field to help them tell these stories so that they resonate with the public.
It's interesting. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, was with us, Mitch, in our first half hour of the show, and he has a survey going on to his constituents in Ward 6. What are now the three top issues for you? And water now and climate has now definitely moved right into the top three, right after public safety issues. So it's on the radar screen for a lot of people, Mitch Tobin.
Yes, and I think these, you know, precipitous declines in the reservoir levels at Lake Mead and Lake Powell and elsewhere, they're just undeniable. You can't ignore that. And I think that's really been a significant wake-up call for a lot of people and getting people to realize that, you know, we have a fairly precarious system right now in terms of supplying this very fast-growing region with water. And, you know, this mega drought that we've experienced has really forced a day of reckoning on the Colorado River. And so, you know, I think it's maybe one of the silver linings of this problem facing the river is that many more people are now aware of the problem and of their reliance on the river.
Yep. All right, Mitch Tobin, always a pleasure talking with you, checking in with you, Mitch Tobin. Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
All right. Mitch Tobin joining us from Colorado. On behalf of Mitch and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill saying, hope you have a great afternoon.